Disc 2.
Because pinpoint timing was necessary for simultaneous detonation of the devices, the flux pods were interconnected over internet telephone lines. During the two-day countdown, the pods' internal clocks exchanged endless streams of encrypted synchronization data. The NSA intercepted the data pulses as a network anomaly, but ignored them as a seemingly harmless exchange of gibberish. But after Translator decrypted the data streams, analysts immediately recognized the sequence as a network-synchronized countdown. The pods were located and removed a full 3 hours before they were scheduled to go off. Susan knew that without Translator, the NSA was helpless against advanced electronic terrorism. She eyed the run monitor. It still read over 15 hours. Even if Tancato's file broke right now, the NSA was sunk. Crypto would be relegated to breaking less than 2 codes a day. Even at the present rate of 150 a day, there was still a backlog of files awaiting decryption.
"Tancato called me last month," Strathmore said, interrupting Susan's thoughts.
Susan looked up.
"Tancato called you?"
He nodded.
"To warn me."
"Warn you? He hates you."
"He called to tell me he was perfecting an algorithm that wrote unbreakable codes. I didn't believe him."
"But why would he tell you about it?" Susan demanded. "Did he want you to buy it?"
"No. It was blackmail."
Things suddenly began falling into place for Susan.
"Of course," she said, amazed. "He wanted you to clear his name."
"No," Strathmore frowned. "Tancato wanted Translator."
"Translator?"
"Yes, he ordered me to go public and tell the world we have Translator. He said if we admitted we can read public email, he would destroy Digital Fortress."
Susan looked doubtful. Strathmore shrugged.
"Either way, it's too late now. He's posted a complimentary copy of Digital Fortress at his internet site. Everyone in the world can download it."
Susan went white.
"He what?"
"It's a publicity stunt, nothing to worry about. The copy he posted is encrypted. People can download it, but nobody can open it. It's ingenious, really. The source code for Digital Fortress has been encrypted, locked shut."
Susan looked amazed.
"Of course. So everybody can have a copy, but nobody can open it."
"Exactly. Tancato's dangling a carrot."
"Have you seen the algorithm?"
The commander looked puzzled.
"No, I told you, it's encrypted."
Susan looked equally puzzled.
"But we've got Translator. Why not just decrypt it?"
But when Susan saw Strathmore's face, she realized the rules had changed.
"Oh, my God,"
she gasped, suddenly understanding.
"Digital Fortress is encrypted with itself?"
Strathmore nodded.
"Bingo."
Susan was amazed. The formula for Digital Fortress had been encrypted using Digital Fortress. Tancato had posted a priceless mathematical recipe, but the text of the recipe had been scrambled, and it had used itself to do the scrambling.
"It's Bigelman's safe,"
Susan stammered in awe. Strathmore nodded. Bigelman's safe was a hypothetical cryptography scenario in which a safe builder wrote blueprints for an unbreakable safe. He wanted to keep the blueprints a secret, so he built the safe and locked the blueprints inside. Tancato had done the same thing with Digital Fortress. He'd protected his blueprints by encrypting them with the formula outlined in his blueprints.
"And the file in Translator?" Susan asked.
"I downloaded it from Tancato's internet site like everyone else. The NSA is now the proud owner of the Digital Fortress algorithm. We just can't open it."
Susan marveled at Ensai Tancato's ingenuity. Without revealing his algorithm, he had proven to the NSA that it was unbreakable. Strathmore handed her a newspaper clipping. It was a translated blurb from the Nikkei Shimbun, the Japanese equivalent of the Wall Street Journal, stating that the Japanese programmer Ensai Tancato had completed a mathematical formula he claimed could write unbreakable codes. The formula was called Digital Fortress and was available for review on the internet. The programmer would be auctioning it off to the highest bidder. The column went on to say that although there was enormous interest in Japan, the few U.S. software companies who had heard about Digital Fortress deemed the claim preposterous, akin to turning lead to gold. The formula, they said, was a hoax and not to be taken seriously. Susan looked up.
An auction?
Strathmore nodded. Right now, every software company in Japan has downloaded an encrypted copy of Digital Fortress and is trying to crack it open. Every second they can't, the bidding price climbs.
That's absurd, Susan shot back. All the new encrypted files are uncrackable unless you have translator. Digital Fortress could be nothing more than a generic public domain algorithm, and none of these companies could break it.
But it's a brilliant marketing ploy, Strathmore said. Think about it. All brands of bulletproof glass stop bullets, but if a company dares you to put a bullet through theirs, suddenly everybody's trying.
And the Japanese actually believe Digital Fortress is different? Better than everything else on the market?
Tankato may have been shunned, but everybody knows he's a genius. He's practically a cult icon among hackers. If Tankato says the algorithm's unbreakable, it's unbreakable.
But they're all unbreakable as far as the public knows.
Yes, Strathmore mused. For the moment.
What's that supposed to mean?
Strathmore sighed. 20 years ago, no one imagined we'd be breaking 12-bit stream ciphers. But technology progressed. It always does. Software manufacturers assume at some point computers like Translator will exist. Technology is progressing exponentially, and eventually current public key algorithms will lose their security. Better algorithms will be needed to stay ahead of tomorrow's computers.
And Digital Fortress is it?
Exactly. An algorithm that resists brute force will never become obsolete, no matter how powerful code-breaking computers get. It could become a world standard overnight.
Susan pulled in a long breath. God help us, she whispered. Can we make a bid?
Strathmore shook his head. Tankato gave us our chance. He made that clear. It's too risky anyway. If we get caught, we're basically admitting that we're afraid of his algorithm. We'd be making a public confession not only that we have Translator, but that Digital Fortress is immune.
What's the time frame?
Strathmore frowned. Tankato planned to announce the highest bidder tomorrow at noon.
Susan felt her stomach tighten. Then what?
The arrangement was that he would give the winner the passkey.
The passkey?
Part of the ploy. Everybody's already got the algorithm, so Tankato's auctioning off the passkey that unlocks it.
Susan groaned. Of course.
It was perfect. Clean and simple. Tankato had encrypted Digital Fortress, and he alone held the passkey that unlocked it. She found it hard to fathom that somewhere out there, probably scrawled on a piece of paper in Tankato's pocket, there was a 64-character passkey that could end U.S. intelligence gathering forever. Susan suddenly felt ill as she imagined the scenario. Tankato would give his passkey to the highest bidder, and that company would unlock the Digital Fortress file. Then it probably would embed the algorithm in a tamper-proof chip, and within 5 years, every computer would come preloaded with a Digital Fortress chip. No commercial manufacturer had ever dreamed of creating an encryption chip because normal encryption algorithms eventually become obsolete. But Digital Fortress would never become obsolete. With a rotating clear text function, no brute force attack would ever find the right key. A new digital encryption standard, from now until forever. Every code unbreakable. Bankers, brokers, terrorists, spies, one world, one algorithm. Anarchy.
What are the options? Susan probed.
She was well aware that desperate times called for desperate measures, even at the NSA. We can't remove him, if that's what you're asking. It was exactly what Susan was asking. In her years with the NSA, Susan had heard rumors of its loose affiliations with the most skilled assassins in the world, hired hands brought in to do the intelligence community's dirty work. Strathmore shook his head. Tankato's too smart to leave us an option like that.
Susan felt oddly relieved. He's protected?
Not exactly.
In hiding?
Strathmore shrugged. Tankato left Japan,
He planned to check his bids by phone, but we know where he is.
And you don't plan to make a move?
No. He's got insurance. Tancaro gave a copy of his passkey to an anonymous third party, in case anything happened.
Of course, Susan marveled. A guardian angel. And I suppose if anything happens to Tancaro, the mystery man sells the key.
Worse. Anyone hits Tancaro, and his partner publishes.
Susan looked confused. His partner publishes the key?
Strathmore nodded. Posts it on the internet, puts it in newspapers, on billboards. In effect, he gives it away.
Susan's eyes widened. Free downloads?
Exactly. Tancaro figured if he was dead, he wouldn't need the money. Why not give the world a little farewell gift?
There was a long silence. Susan breathed deeply, as if to absorb the terrifying truth. Inside Tancaro has created an unbreakable algorithm. He's holding us hostage.
She suddenly stood. Her voice was determined.
We must contact Tancaro. There must be a way to convince him not to release. We can offer him triple the highest bid. We can clear his name, anything.
Too late, Strathmore said. He took a deep breath. Ensai Tancaro was found dead this morning in Seville, Spain.
Chapter 8. The twin-engine Learjet 60 touched down on the scorching runway. Outside the window, the barren landscape of Spain's lower Extremadura blurred and then slowed to a crawl.
Mr. Becker, a voice crackled, we're here.
Becker stood and stretched. After unlatching the overhead compartment, he remembered he had no luggage. There had been no time to pack. It didn't matter. He'd been promised the trip would be brief, in and out. As the engines wound down, the plane eased out of the sun and into a deserted hangar opposite the main terminal. A moment later, the pilot appeared and popped the hatch. Becker tossed back the last of his cranberry juice, put the glass on the wet bar, and scooped up his suit coat. The pilot pulled a thick manila envelope from his flight suit.
I was instructed to give you this.
He handed it to Becker. On the front, scrawled in blue pen, were the words, Keep the change. Becker thumbed through the thick stack of reddish bills.
What the?
Local currency, the pilot offered flatly.
I know what it is, Becker stammered, but it's too much. All I need is taxi fare.
Becker did the conversion in his head.
What's in here is worth thousands of dollars. I have my orders, sir.
The pilot turned and hoisted himself back into the cabin. The door slid shut behind him. Becker stared up at the plane and then down at the money in his hand. After standing a moment in the empty hangar, he put the envelope in his breast pocket, shouldered his suit coat, and headed out across the runway. It was a strange beginning. Becker pushed it from his mind. With a little luck, he'd be back in time to salvage some of his Stone Manor trip with Susan.
In and out, he told himself. In and out.
There was no way he could have known. Chapter 9. Systems security technician Phil Chartrukian had only intended to be inside Crypto a minute, just long enough to grab some paperwork he'd forgotten the day before. But it was not to be. After making his way across the crypto floor and stepping into the SysSec lab, he immediately knew something was not right. The computer terminal that perpetually monitored Translator's internal workings was unmanned, and the monitor was switched off. Chartrukian called out,
Hello?
There was no reply. The lab was spotless, as if no one had been there for hours. Although Chartrukian was only 23 and relatively new to the SysSec squad, he'd been trained well, and he knew the drill. There was always a SysSec on duty in crypto, especially on Saturdays when no cryptographers were around. He immediately powered up the monitor and turned to the duty board on the wall.
Who's on watch? He demanded aloud, scanning the list of names.
According to the schedule, a young rookie named Seidenberg was supposed to have started a double shift at midnight the night before. Chartrukian glanced around the empty lab and frowned.
So where the hell is he?